And this is your host, Julio Martinez, and you are indeed up for another half hour of Arts in Review, celebrating the best in live theater and cabaret in the greater Southern California area. This day, it's kind of crowded in here because I have an author, I have a playwright, I have a television writer, I have a cartoonist. And they're all crowded in the studio. Fortunately, they all happen to reside in the persona of Mr. William Link. You're going to hear about him and a lot more, and a musical interlude from my old partner, Al Giroux. Please stay tuned to Arts in Review. I have to sort of go back in a few years to the 1960s when I happened to stumble upon a television show, and the first 2 minutes I said, this is going to bore me to death. This is not like any other crime drama I've ever seen. This guy can't even talk right. That person who couldn't talk right happened to be named Lieutenant Columbo. No one knows who his first name was. And it happened to be co-created by the gentleman I have in studio, Mr. William Link, who with his partner Richard Levinson practically invented the television crime drama genre. Hi, Bill. Thank you for coming in.
My pleasure.
And it seems like you and I talk every year or two and stay in touch through the decade.
True.
And I was delighted when your esteemed and beauteous wife called to tell me that you had actually put together what is called the Columbo Collection, a series of short stories featuring our favorite lieutenant from the LAPD, Lieutenant Columbo. And it's called the Columbo Collection. I went to a book signing you did at the Mystery Books store in Westwood a few weeks ago.
Right.
I got to ask, after all these years, what was the motivation to revisit Mr. Columbo?
Well, I've written a lot of short stories since Dick's demise, all published, and I never wrote a Columbo. And it suddenly occurred to me one morning, the light bulb went off over my head, as sometimes happen to we writers, that the most popular character Dick and I created, we had 16 series on the air, was Columbo. And I had never written a Columbo short story. So I sat down. At this point, I've written 37. This book has 12.
Right.
Even dozen. None are based on any of the Columbo segments on television. They're all brand sparkling new. And I guarantee if you like the television show, I guarantee you you'll like the short stories.
Now, you and your partner, I would want to say prolific, but prolific is not a grandiose enough word. Aside from Columbo, you created Mannix, The Ellery Queen, Murder, She Wrote, many, many more.
McCloud. McCloud. Yeah. Honey West. Do you remember that? The Spelling series, yeah, with the beautiful blonde.
And you also had the time to write a few movies, other series, and then you write for the stage and almost all your adult life.
Correct. I grew up in Philadelphia, as did Dick. And when we were kids, our parents would take us to see pre-Broadway plays that always came through, most of them, through Philadelphia. On their way to get the kinks out before they hit the bayonets of the critics in New York. So we both really grew up on the theater and loved the theater. And then we both went to the University of Pennsylvania. We majored in business at the Wharton School, the premier business school.
You made your parents proud, right?
Oh, sure. And we learned there we hated business. It was so dull and boring. There was no way Dick and I would go into business, and thank God we did not.
The You had mentioned at the top that Columbo, you think, is your favorite character.
Oh, yeah, and Dick's too. Dick always said, he said, after I'm dead and buried, it will say, co-created Columbo on my tombstone. And ironically, he didn't have a tombstone. His ashes are in an urn, which I've seen. and let me make it clear, I miss him to this day. He was a great guy. We were really like brothers in the obit. That's what the New York Times said. And we were very close. And we had to be because we saw, you know, we wrote 7 days a week sometimes. We saw, you know, each other more than we saw our wives.
You want to know what my memory of Mr. Levinson is?
Yeah, I didn't know you had met
him. Oh, no. Well, here's my memory.
Yes.
I would call your house. Someone would answer. I said, hi, this is Julio. Is Marjorie home? And I'd get this gruff voice, say, call the other line and hang up.
It was Dick.
That was Dick.
Right. That's right. He was the police dog.
Yeah.
Always on duty.
The genesis of Columbo. It started out as a kind of movie of the week for the Chevy Mystery Theater.
Yes.
And then you liked it so much you adapted it into a stage play.
Yeah, we realized that if you do a live show, and it was in those days, it was very contained. And that worked for the stage, because the stage usually have one set, and the actors are in that set. It's the old Aristotelian, you know, method of drama. So we figured this is, you know, an easy stage adaptation, and it was. And almost immediately, at that time, a big Broadway producer, Paul Gregory, optioned the play. He got an incredible cast. The great Thomas Mitchell, who, you know, was the drunken
doctor on
Stagecoach. He had played a lot of movie cops. He was the father of Scarlett O'Hara in Gone with the Wind.
Right.
And he played Columbo. He was the second person to play Columbo. Bert Fried played it on the Chevy Mystery.
Very popular television character.
Yes.
Actor. Right.
Yeah, he was very good. He eventually became, I think, president of SAG years later. And Agnes Moorehead was in the cast, and then a very popular screen actor, Joseph Cotten,
right,
played the murderer.
Which people remember from Citizen Kane.
Correct. Absolutely. And many other pictures, too. Some very good ones. Portrait of Jenny, a lot of things.
Right.
And so that was really the genesis. The stage play was very successful. It played all across the United States and in Canada, and made a lot of money. And the producer wanted to take it to Broadway, and we would not allow him because he didn't allow us to make any changes. And we said, hey, Paul, this is what you do in tryouts for a play. We learn things we want to change and have to be changed. We don't want to be killed by the critics, you know, on the big stem. And he said no. And we said, then you can't do the play anymore. And he said, I have to tell you this, boys, when you leave this office, this was in Beverly Hills, you'll never work in Hollywood again. Yeah. We said, okay, we left the audience or the office. And we worked for the next 40 years, and he didn't.
The Columbo, everyone knows, of course. You can't take Peter Falk out of Columbo.
No,
Columbo,
no. He
out
is
of
Columbo.
Peter.
Yeah.
But it does seem, in retrospect, Thomas Mitchell, that it's an odd choice to play. How did you get Paul?
You mean Peter?
Peter.
Yes. We sold the play a few years later after the stage production to Universal, and they gave us offices. They put us under a 7-year contract, and we sat in the office because they had bought Prescription Murder, which is the name of the Columbo play, and they wanted us to produce it for a 2-hour world premiere, which they were doing in those days. And some of them were very, very good pictures, as good as, you know, good feature films. And Dick and I sat in the office and we said, who are we going to get to play Columbo? Thomas Mitchell isn't in it anymore. He died in Philadelphia during the run of the play. Who are we going to get? Well, I'll never forget, the phone rang about 2 days later, and the famous gravelly voice was on the phone. Our old friend Peter Falk, we used to have breakfast with him in New York occasionally. When Dick and I got out of the service, he was just starting his acting career in New York. And he was a very charming, very friendly, down-to-earth guy, quite intelligent. And he called out of the blue and he said, I just read that script and I'll kill to play that cop. Mm. And we said, you know, this is really good because he's intelligent. He's not good looking. He's not ugly in any sense of the word. We didn't want a handsome cop. We wanted to go against all the stereotypes. You know, the Columbo character stumbles around a lot. He's forgetful. Mm. He's always talking about his wife and his other relatives.
But you never see his wife.
We had a pact with Peter early. We would never see Mrs. Columbo. And Freddie Silverman, who was then the head of NBC in those days, or ABC, I forget, he put a Mrs. Columbo on the air, which was a disaster.
That was a whole separate series that you weren't involved in.
Well, he wanted us to be involved, and we said, no thanks. And it died a death. It wasn't very good. It was that first stage play which really started the whole thing.
I am talking to Mr. William Link, the co-creator, along with Richard Levinson, of so much work. If I kept talking about it, we'd never get to interviewing him anymore. But I am going to take a musical interlude. My good friend Al Jarreau leaves today for his summer European tour. And because Mr. Link and his wife and I go back way back when I was working with Al, I thought it would be a great time to play an old CD that was actually made in 1980. And this features Al singing a song he co-wrote with Earl Klug. And listen, you might recognize the guitarist. I am back, and once again, that was A Rhyme This Time, written by Al Jarreau and the great Earl Klug, performed by Mr. Jarreau. And I'm sort of doing it in honor of my in-studio guest, William Link, who actually knew me way back then.
That's true.
At the top of the hour, I alluded to the fact that I had a novelist, a playwright, a screenwriter, and a cartoonist. And you have been exhibited. I've seen your work. You're a very witty fellow.
Thank you.
And you can draw.
Yeah, well, it was a great way to get away from all the writing because I write 7 days a week. And it was relaxing. And I satirized Hollywood. And some Hollywood writers, not to be named, and they're not in the cartoons, really. And there's a little man in a green suit that runs through them that sort of looks like me. I called him my altered ego. And it was a lot of fun. I broke my arm last summer, and I haven't gone back to cartooning yet. And I don't know if I will, but we'll see. I've been, I have the short story collection now of Columbo, and a lot of people have said, when are you going to write a Columbo novel? And I said, let me think about that. But it's very hard in a novel to sustain over 300 pages. Columbo bugging one individual, that gets to be, I don't want to bug the writer too, the reader too. So I don't know about that. I have to think about that.
I read all 12 of them.
Very good.
And you are right. People will recognize the methodology. And this is something that I found very interesting right from the beginning. We know who the murderer is.
Yes.
Right away, we know who the murderer is.
Yeah.
So why watch the rest of the show? But it's all built around, and the murderer is usually someone who's erudite. Wealthy is good.
Right.
Always brilliant, brilliant mind.
Yes.
And then you have the schlep over here.
Yes.
Constantly bugging him.
Yes.
Or
deceptively
her.
A schlep, though.
Yes.
Computer mind, the murderer never knows.
So the essence of the shows were this fascination with just watching how this person who seems to be going everywhere but straight eventually undoes the murderer.
Exactly. We always said... the murderer has all the aces in the deck, the four aces. Maybe if he's really bad murderer, he's got five aces. And in comes Columbo with nothing in his hand. And now how is he either going to have a duel of wits? How is Columbo going to track him or her? Because we had women murderers, too, in the series.
Well,
I do in the Columbo collection, too.
It's also interesting because I'm used to the mentality of that time. So in your short stories, people use cell phones and are on the computer and can do things that you couldn't do back then.
Correct.
But there was one story that really kind of intrigued me because in this one, I really didn't know who the murderer was until the last two pages, Grief.
Yes.
And because you sort of
now and then I threw in a murder mystery, which we never did. Peter and I had discussed it many times. Should we do a murder mystery with an unknown murder rather than a will he get caught show that we did? And we never got around to it. I think the reason was we both thought stick to the pattern that we have here. It's incredibly successful for the audiences all over the world. Don't break the pattern. Don't do something that different.
Well, it works. It works to...
Good.
And you have sympathetic murderers.
Yes. Yes.
You can empathize with it.
Yes. Well, that was a trick, too, on the television series, that sometimes Columbo feels, rather sad after he catches the person, that, here's a person who had wealth, had achievements, in this world, and yet did something so evil, so rotten as to murder another human being, and it really sort of galls Columbo. He's very non-judgmental in almost all the cases. He never screams at a murderer. He never says, now I've got you, and that's also unusual, in crime fiction. And crime shows you see on television. where there's no gloating, and it's a totally non-judgmental detective.
I sometimes have wondered what the work ethic was between you and Mr. Levinson. I know, as you said, you seemed to me you worked 7 days a week.
Yes.
And your wife saw you sometimes or from around the corner.
Yes, that's true.
I was wondering how you balanced the work, because aside from all these murder mystery series that always seemed to run for years, you did some other kinds of movies that were completely of a different style. And one of my favorites, and I did not know until I read your bio that you had done it, was The Execution of Private Slovic.
That was our favorite, with Marty Sheen.
Marty Sheen is based upon the true story of the only soldier that was executed for desertion in World War II.
Correct. Military injustice, we called it. Dick and I were always socially oriented going many years back. We didn't need consciousness raising. We were already there. We were for women's rights, etc. We were typical, I shouldn't say this because the conservatives out there won't buy my book, The Columbo Collection, but we were liberal in our politics, and that's the way we operated. And, you know, Columbo was a little guy up against the wealthy, you know, and the people who had all the advantages in life. And that's why I think the character was so successful all around the world, including here, because a lot of people could identify with him. And I once had another theory about Columbo, like the great Conan Doyle character Sherlock Holmes and his sidekick Watson. Columbo, in a way, combines both of them. He has the mystery-solving intellect of the brilliant Sherlock Holmes, but he also has the everyman quality of Watson. And I think that combination fused in one crime solver is unique, and I think it's probably at the root of his popularity.
The collection I'm talking about is the Columbo Collection, which contains 12 original short stories featuring my favorite LAPD, Lieutenant Columbo, and whose first name will never be ever be mentioned or printed. But as
never.
you said, you've written enough for two more novels and have two more collections.
Correct. Let's see how this sells. And then we'll get into that, Julio.
There's actually a Facebook page, The Columbo Collection. You can find out more, also how to buy it, where to buy it. And you have a website, williamlink.tv.
Correct.
And where they can find out much about you and your vast career. Mr. Levinson died in 1989. 87. Yes. And you went on to work, and because you work. That
well,
is what you did.
I'll tell you, it was a problem to begin with. I thought it would be because we'd written together since the first day of junior high school. I mean, this is a long, long time. I mean, Stephen Botchko is a terrific writer himself and was our story editor in the second year of Columbo. He once said, when I met these guys, I thought they were incredible. He said they literally thought with one mind. And I've never seen that before in two individuals. And I think he hit it right on the head.
Was it the New York Times who dubbed you Mr. Rolls and Mr. Royce
Correct.
On television?
Correct. Mister? Yes, I'm very proud of that.
Yeah, that's very nice.
Yeah, that was, I think, mostly not for our crime shows, but for our socially significant shows. That Certain Summer, which is the first American television show about male homosexuality that hardly made gay people out to be monsters. And I was very sympathetic to gay people. And I remember that night, ABC, their affiliates got bomb threats.
Oh, boy.
From people who said, don't put that filth on the air. We did The Gun about the travels of an American handgun, and the NRA found out about it early. Wouldn't let us film in gun stores. We had to make up our own gun store, the studio. And they had a letter-writing campaign against, again, ABC. And ABC was so intimidated, the license was to put the show on The Gun twice, one in prime time and then that summer. They never put on the summer rerun of the show.
Bill, I'm so sorry to say that 30 minutes is
that one
fled
quick
by.
Quick.
So, but subsequent to you, Mr. Levinson's death, you went on to create the Cosby Mysteries,
correct,
the Ellery Queen Mystery,
yeah,
series.
Yeah.
And you obviously have not slowed down.
No. I didn't know whether I cried if I could write without Dick, but I had a terrific shrink who helped me. I knew I needed some help. And the first thing I wrote was an original feature motion picture called Hit, about a hitman. And I sold it to Universal for $500,000, so I figured I could write without Dick. But I still miss him.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Thank you, Bill, for coming
in. Absolute pleasure. My old friend Julio.
Please stay tuned to Pacifica Performance Showcase, featuring as host my producer, Donna Walker. Thank you, D'Angelo, our great engineer, and our intern.